taught the dreams in Jung 2 or 3 times, and always have enjoyed it, and so have most of the people who've come to the talks. Not yet. Thank you, sir. We were told to do the preliminaries before we got the tape. After all, the people on the tape don't need to hear all this right away. And I'm a little hoarse, so bear with me. Also, I woke up at 3:30 or something because we came from Minneapolis, and so I wrote it all down, and I'm going to read it, which I normally don't do. I'm a psychotherapist in Minneapolis and do mostly dream analysis, but I'm not an analyst. So I called the session Inner Journeys, and the first one is What Did Jung Say? And with this I'll start. Emily White, Inner Journeys, What Did Jung Say? Carl Gustav Jung was a Swiss psychiatrist who followed Freud, was his disciple, or worked with him for about 6 years, but broke totally new ground. And this talk will be an overview of his life and of his concepts. During the rest of the week and the other weeks, I will go into more detail on specific things that are on the board now. Lawrence van der Post, who wrote this book, The Story of Our Time, about Jung, called Jung the Columbus of the inner world. And he was a prolific writer and one man who really understood the unconscious as well as mythology, alchemy, psychiatry, the medical aspects, and wrote prolifically, but very difficult reading, which is one reason that he wrote Man and His Symbols. This is the big book, Man and His Symbols, but a paperback copy of this book should be in the bookstore. There is one copy in the circulating library. It will appear, I think, when Mary Schramm comes, and if not, ask somebody else. They have ordered them, as far as I know. I won't be following the text exactly, but it is the book that he wrote at the end of his life for the lay public. Everything else is difficult reading. But to show you the importance of dreams, or that he placed on dreams, he had a dream where he was standing in a public place talking to workers, blue-collar workers, telling them of his theories, and they understood him. So as a result, he called John Freeman, who wrote the introduction, and said, yes, I will accept your offer to write a popular book. Previously it said, no, I don't want to do that. And he worked the last year of his life and finished it like 10 days before he died. When he died, the story goes that lightning hit the oak tree under which he used to sit. Or was it a linden tree? Whichever. And so I thought about that, and I said, the heavens themselves blaze forth the death of princes, said Shakespeare about Hamlet. And I think that he was a prince indeed. His object was always to help men and women to know themselves, and that by this self-knowledge they could live full, rich, and happy lives. He completed this task of writing the book, Man and His Symbols, which addresses a wider public, and completed his life at the same time. Jung was a Christian. His father and a long line of ancestors were Protestant ministers. Jung grappled early in life with the problem of evil. Finally, he came to believe that a certain amount of evil resides in each of us. And he called this aspect of evil the shadow. Unless we can own our shadow and not pretend that we're all good, we cannot become whole. Wholeness, according to Jung, is quite unrealizable, but a goal that goads us into growth. He favors the Eastern concept of yin-yang. Are you familiar with that? And sees good and evil as inseparable opposites, always warring, alternating, and being transformed. In our task in life is to grow towards wholeness and to transform darkness into light. How do we do this? We become more conscious of what was previously unconscious. And the way to do this is to know your dreams, one way anyhow. But a hardcore residue of darkness or evil is the shadow that must be accepted, that will not be transformed. It's that recalcitrant shadow that sits on our shoulder and is ready to pounce and trip us up whenever we lower our guard. Maybe that's why Christ said, watch and pray. Jung was also a man who was very versatile. He studied medicine, specialized in psychiatry at the Burghölzli in Zurich. He was a Swiss man who spent most of his life near Zurich in Küsnacht. He always liked and needed to live near water. And so he had his house built near the lake. Lake Geneva, is it?
Geneva.
Yeah. He named his place Bollingen, and today we have his works, his collected works, called the Bollingen series. And they're thick volumes. 16? 20? I don't know. On his property, he himself built a tower of stone, a round tower, and carved an elaborate stone monument with all the things that he wanted to that should endure. And over his door, he carved the words vocatus atque non vocatus deus ad erit. You want to translate for us?
Go ahead.
All right. Called or not called, God remains. God is here, ad erit, he. Whether we call on God or not, God is there. He liked also to cook gourmet meals and to chop wood. He said he got some of his best thoughts while chopping wood. Mavericks, take heart. Jung's reputation has grown tremendously in recent past. He's emerging as the original thinker and widely traveled man that he was. He traveled to Africa, traveled to the United States, but was basically a resident of Switzerland. He read widely in mythology, alchemy, and philosophy, and his whole outlook is broader than that of Freud. And his greatest contribution is to say that in the unconscious there are other things than sex and death, which is what Freud said. Today, there are many new titles by followers of Jung, but he doesn't like disciples. He doesn't like people who call themselves Jungian. And he was very resistant to having a C.G. Jung Institute set up in Zurich. But now, today, there is a C.G. Jung Institute in New York, in Minneapolis, L.A., San Francisco, and Dallas, and many other cities I don't know of. But Jungians are very individualistic and often very introverted, and so they split up worse than denominations do. Therefore, when I say what Jung said, I was hesitating. What did Jung say? There are many versions, but we do agree on some of the basic concepts. And there's a book by Bennett called What Jung Really Said, but I've ordered it. But I have ordered the really. So, one of the other books maybe somebody has seen is Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. He wrote his autobiography in terms of his inner life, like the inner journey I'm talking about, only faintly sketching in what happened on the outside, but basing it all on his inner life, his dreams, his memories, and his reflections. Jung's own writing is rather difficult, as I mentioned, heavy Germanic. And even though I speak German and know the Germanic, it's still hard to understand him. Therefore, this book, Man and His Symbols, is such a boon because it's written and edited for people to understand. Jung's life work was that of a psychiatrist who specialized in schizophrenia and was a thinker and quite a fine artist as well. He filled a red book with paintings, or drawings rather, drawings and paintings of dream symbols, and one of my sessions will be on dream symbols. He has a famous one of Philemon, like the one in the Bible. How do you pronounce it? Philemon?
Philemon.
Whom he regarded as his dream guide. Among other things, we have the wise old man in our dreams, and that was his wise old man. So before I open it for discussion, I want to go through some of these terms. As I said, this is an overview. But as you can see from the ones up there, there are some that you have all used and known. Extroversion, introversion, haven't you all used this? Probably wrongly, but everybody, I'm an extrovert. Has nothing to do whether you like people or not. Extroversion means the direction of your energy, psychic energy, is directed outward. And you spend most of your energy on outer things or people, but most often the outer world, whatever it is. And less energy, not time, energy on inner things. So the extrovert may not be so interested in dreams, may call dreams poppycock and all the rest, may be much more interested in what's going on in the real world. The people at Holden, by and large, are probably introverts, just because they're here. Introverts spend most of their energy on the inner world and are either confused or reject what's going on out there, which doesn't mean that they don't like people or don't know that this is made of stone and that's made of, well, I don't really know. But they may not be so well acquainted with the outer world and very well acquainted or better acquainted with what's going on inside and interested in dreams. And dreams will be the main thread in all these talks. Introverts also like to keep journals and write poetry, philosophize. But again, it has nothing to do with how much you like or spend time with people. So I hope when you go home, you know the difference between extroversion and introversion. The word complex was coined by Jung. And you've all heard of inferiority complex, which is only one of about 20 complexes. We have a mother complex and a father complex and an Oedipus complex, even though that's Freud's terrain, and a lot of debate about it. But the word complex, which is a constellation of archetypes, which is the next word, that hooks your emotions and is often repressed and you don't know about unless you become acquainted with your dreams or go into therapy, see. So when you get all heated up and some topic, it often means that you've hooked a complex, and it's not necessarily bad. We always think of a complex as something bad. It can be a good thing as well. But we'll go into that another time. Archetypes are unconscious predispositions that we find, again, we recognize in dreams, and I'll talk about that another time. They're similar to instincts, if that helps. Anyhow, that's a term he coined, and we Jungians talk about archetypes like they were popcorn. So they are found in the collective unconscious, which is only knowable through dreams. The personal unconscious is what you can call up. That's where your memory and your memory resides, kind of. Things that you're not aware of, but which you can call up. The collective unconscious is wider and bigger. You can't know it directly. You can only know it through dreams. And dreams are like a mirror, and John was talking about the Bible being a mirror. So similarly, dreams are a mirror to the collective unconscious. So I'd like for you to think about keeping track of your dreams. We can talk about that when I open it up to discussion. And we've already mentioned a shadow, that part of the dark side, the unacceptable you that everybody has. And one way you can recognize the shadow is listen to what you gossip about somebody you don't like of your own sex. She has such a dirty house. Or something of that sort. Well, much of that is projection of your own shadow. In order to during therapy, you call back the projection, and then you come down to the last part where you say, well, I guess I have to own this part of me. And then you're aware of it, and then it doesn't bother you as much or trip you up, nor do you have to gossip about others as much in that way. psychic energy I've talked about. Persona is that mask that you wear when somebody says, what do you do? I'm a teacher, I'm an accountant, I'm a waitress, whatever, psychologist. It's the persona is the mask that is socially acceptable. That's what you present to others. And it's not a mask that you have to take off or that is bad. It's something, it's very much part of you, but it's not all of you. See, if you identify with your persona, you're missing out on all the dynamics underneath. The persona is very helpful, and as you grow, you sound, the mask means sounding through, personare means sounding through a mask, and if the sound is clear and in contact with the inner self, then you are okay. You're okay anyhow, but more okay. The ego is that which directs you in the outer life, the conscious part. And actually, it's just about one-tenth of, in relation to the unconscious. It's just a small part. Again, if you identify with the ego, you're missing out on all the other things. That's why dreams are so important. To become whole, you have to be in touch with the unconscious. Now, individuation, this is an awful lot. I said this was an overview. We will go into each of these concepts later. Individuation is the path that you go through life to become more individual. You grow and become more yourself, more in touch with yourself, capital S, and more, hopefully, whole and holy. anima and animus are, again, terms we bandy about, like, you know, we don't really know the real meaning, and Jung and his wife, with whom he collaborated, wrote volumes on it, and briefly, the anima is the feminine part in a man. That's why the two symbols. The unconscious feminine part in the masculine. The animus is the unconscious masculine part in the woman. We have to own both. It's easier today where people are not so bound in their roles as man and wife, and in modern marriages recognize this, and it's no shame for a man to wash dishes and take care of the baby and all that. And women can have careers, so I think we've come to recognize these two aspects in everybody. Well, that brings us down to transformation. I've talked about transforming energy from unconscious to conscious, and that's what happens in therapy. You bring a dream, and in the analysis of the dream, you recognize parts of the shadow, for example, some repressed things, some complex, and you say, aha. And it becomes conscious, and it no longer has that power to cause you difficulties, hopefully. Takes a while. And transformation, there are symbols, well, I won't go into all that. There are certain symbols that are signs that things are happening, like flowers and growth or in the kitchen and so forth. When you have dreams that take place in the kitchen, for example, we often say this is a place of transformation because you take flour and eggs and butter and out comes a cake that you can eat, you know. And just 1 minute, I have a little more. Growth is essentially in a spiral, so that you go over and over the same ground, but always in a little different way. So you can never say, I have arrived. It's the greatest fallacy. You never arrive. As long as you're alive, you will be moving up or down, you know, but hopefully up. We have this desire to grow upwards, the flowers, but they do wilt, and we sometimes wilt too. And I will be talking about mandalas. I don't know if it was that one.
Yes.
Yeah, and those are some healing symbols, and we'll talk about that more. So finally, I just want to say the importance of dreams, that I urge you all to try to remember your dreams, that all dreams are important, that some dreams are, yes, more important, bigger, more vital than others. Some are just processing dreams that you, you know, go over and over. How are you going to get to Holden? I dreamt over and over again. How are we going to make the connections, you know? But they're bigger dreams as well. To remember your dreams, I think you have to first go to sleep saying, I will remember my dreams, because everybody does dream every night. And have a little pad and pencil by your bed. And before you open your eyes, kind of go back and say, did I dream? What did I dream? And reconstruct it in your head. Then you can write it down anytime. My husband, who didn't pay much attention to his dreams, is now writing reams and reams and reams. I can hardly keep up with him. And if you don't remember your dreams, you just may not need to remember them, though I've always found it helpful to look at them. I'll end with an Arabic proverb. Tell me what a man dreams, and I will tell you what he is. Yeah. Any questions? Throw it open for discussion. Yes?
I didn't quite get what you said on reconciliation of opposites.
Oh, I guess I left that out. Jung said that whatever opposites there are, they need to be reconciled in such a way as to provide a solution. Or let's put it the other way. When opposites occur in your dreams, they often have the seeds of the solution in them. That's the reconciliation of opposites. I don't have a handy example today. It's another term we use to the point where I hardly know what it means anymore, reconciliation of opposites, of course. But basically, if you identify with either side, if it's either or, you will never solve it. You have to say both and. It's both this and that. Does that help?
The yin and yang rather comes in there.
Yes, right. Thank you. That's right. Mm-hmm. And as for sharing of dreams, some people feel more private about them. Others share them more readily. I'll be glad to talk to you individually if you feel you don't want to share them in the group. But by Friday, I think Thursday or Friday, I would like to have some sharing of dreams. Yeah.
Would you say what yin and yang is? Because I don't really understand.
I could draw it on the board. I guess you have to put the top on. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, assuming this is dark, all right? Mm-hmm. This is the dark and the light. They're supposed to be about equal. And they alternate like night and day. But in the dark there's a spot of light, and in the light there's some darkness, like the shadow. And they alternate like day and night. You don't say, I don't want night to fall. You just accept it and go to sleep. And that's how we should kind of react to darkness in ourselves. Yeah?
That has a lot to do with the idea of the male and female intertwining too, doesn't it?
Yes.
The Eastern religion.
Yes. Jung was very much oriented to the Eastern religion and the Eastern outlook, and some of the concepts spring directly from that. And I find it very helpful because, as I said, it's not either or, but both and, so that it's easier to incorporate darkness, unpleasantness, evil, and so forth.
Well, are there certain, and your archetype symbols, are there certain types of dreams that have special meaning for everyone?
Yes, there's one good question. There are broad symbols that I will talk about on Friday that are generally accepted and they're valid, but Jung's main contribution is to individualize the symbols so that they have to mean something to you, even though generally they mean something else. And a good example is if the shoemaker dreams of shoes, it means something different than if somebody else who's not a shoemaker dreams of shoes. Because walking barefoot often means being more in contact with the earth, more rooted. So if the shoemaker takes off his shoes, it would be different.
What did he say about prophetic dreams?
Does that explain it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, there's another concept I just forgot, but I'll try to explain it. He said, if you have the gift of ESP, extrasensory perception, and you could foretell the future in your conscious life, you will also be able, more likely, to have prophetic dreams. I think it's a gift, and not all of us have that gift. But it's only in dreams that we really can look to the future, because it's more timeless. And in the Bible, God has spoken to Joseph and to Jacob and many, many people through dreams. So I think he speaks to us through dreams. Yeah?
I really didn't know I was going to read this, but I want to spring it on. This is Deuteronomy 13, all those strict rules in Leviticus and Deuteronomy. If a prophet rises among you, or a dreamer of dreams, and gives you a sign or wonder, and the sign or wonder which he tells you comes to pass, and if he says, let us go after other gods which you have not known, let us serve them, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or to that dreamer of dreams. For the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. So there are tricks and traps everywhere, even in sleep.
But they're not saying dreams are invalid, but that dreams must be tested, because certainly not all of them, and certainly the synchronicity, that's what I want to come to, of your dreaming of something and then it happening can shake you in such a way that you think, oh my God, I had a prophetic dream. Whereas the term synchronicity, I will write it on the board in a minute, means that two events happen at the same time that are not related. We call them coincidence, and they do shake us up, but actually just because we're blind most of the time. Most of the time those things do happen, but it's only when they hit a complex or something, or are tied in with a dream, that we say, oh my goodness, how did that happen?
Well, that would, another way of saying, maybe relating to what he just read, is that you could say, well, it really lays not so much in the dream as to the interpretation of the dream.
Yes, and that's really quite tricky. I was going to say earlier that Freud had fixed symbols, and one of the big differences between Freudian and Jungian dream interpretation is that Freud would say a tree is a phallic symbol, and the ocean or cave is a feminine symbol, always. And Jung doesn't say that. Though caves or oceans are often feminine symbols, not necessarily for you and you, you know. A spelunker dreaming of a cave, again, it depends on where you're coming from.
You mentioned that everyone dreams, and yet many people are rarely conscious of the fact that they're dreaming, and other people are conscious of dreaming just about every night. Would you care to comment on that?
That, I think, has to do with how much you are in contact with your unconscious, or rather want to remember the dreams and are introverted and place value on dreaming. Perhaps. There seem to be differences, but I think it's not as great a difference as it appears, I think. Yeah?
How is that scientifically documented? For example, if a person says, I never dream, and being as truthful as they know how to be, is it simply by brain wave activity? And then even if the activity is the same as somebody who dreams, that wouldn't necessarily prove, I wouldn't think that they would.
Well, they've done this. They've done the experiment where they've taken people in the lab and then awakened them, even those who said they don't dream, when their eyes begin to move, rapid eye movement. And every time they awakened them, they did report a dream. But you see, you have to be awakened right away. And I had a friend whom I proselytized about remembering his dreams, so he took that seriously, and every time he had a dream, he woke himself up, he said, hey, I can't sleep. I usually only remember one dream is quite enough. I just want to write synchronicity on the board. We'll talk about that too.
What about, incident when you have dreamed something, like it could just last for a few seconds, or even it's happened to me as long as a few minutes, where it's like I've been here before, or I can interpret exactly what the next person is going to say or something. It might just be, you know, one sentence or two lines, or, you know, and it's really weird because you think, this has happened to me before.
It's called déjà vu. Déjà vu. Have you heard that term? Deja vu is another one of those subliminal or half-conscious events where the circumstances, and usually the way the light comes in, catches a complex or a memory that's submerged and makes it appear that this very thing has already happened. I don't think you have to become mystical. I think it's just that it hooks into a complex. And maybe three out of five circumstances are similar, the time of day and a few other things. But it does hit you in a funny way, just like a big dream. And big dreams are remembered without writing them down. So even if you feel you can't remember them, everybody, I think, has remembered one or two big ones. And maybe next time when we have a session, you want to share some of your recent or past dreams that were meaningful to you. But only if you feel comfortable. I've dealt with dreams so long that to me they're sort of something I'm very comfortable with.
Is introversion a cultural thing, or have all peoples at some time had the luxury of the time to look inside?
Good question. According to Jung, I think it is a characteristic attitude that he almost claims is genetic. And this there are cultures that are extroverted in their emphasis and reward. Now, we have an extroverted culture, therefore introverts feel awkward, out of place, crazy even. And then we have introverted cultures where the extrovert feels uncomfortable, just leaves. I mean, extroverts don't stick around, they move. But the introvert is kind of caught in an extroverted culture. Now, I'm fascinated by what happens when you have a child that seems to have an introverted bent and you have very extroverted parents who pull that child out to all these activities. All he wants to do is, you know, go inward, and they don't understand that or don't give him enough time and space. I want to be alone. Oh, well, come on, let's go out, let's drive around. When that child really needs to be alone, I think you should watch that. And the other part where you have, I don't know which is harder, introverted parents who are very content and like to spend a lot of time alone, do a lot of reading, writing, and going inward, and you have kid who wants to be out there. Again, I think he will find ways, because the extrovert will, first of all, be rewarded. He wants to go out for sports. Well, he'll just find his own way, especially when he can do it by himself. But the adolescent who says, I want to be alone or stay home, is often pulled out against his will. I don't know. It's something I've been thinking about. Yes?
Is there a balance between that?
Yes, and that... Is there a balance? Is there a balance between introversion and extroversion?
Yeah.
Theoretically, the first half of life is extroverted. You have to come to terms with job, mate, and the realities of the life. But once the second half of life occurs, and since there's so many senior citizens here now in September, Jung said the second half of life should be an inward journey. That's why I call it inner journeys, and that the task is to become more introverted. To become more. Now, what happens to a person already introverted? I don't know, we can talk about that. Yes?
Another part of that is you talk about the parents that are perhaps extroverted and the teenager who's introverted. How does one begin to know introversion from just being a cop-out to the world?
The $64 question, I've grappled with that myself. I don't know. Inclusive language, he or she is creative, that would say the introversion is more genuine than if he's just copping out and sits around and smokes dope. But
I guess that question is only a reflection of the question that I asked myself. How do I know what's introversion and copying out from trying to deal with the world?
It's a very difficult one. It's not easy. Maybe by their fruits you shall know them, you know. So
it's hard for me to judge whether introversion has very many fruits for myself. Because I think not only in a lot of the religious world around me, but the way I was raised is that my works or my what I have to show, my income, my...
It's the extroverted culture again.
Yeah, my relationships with other people. I don't know how to measure the results of my introversion, in other words, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I'll think about it. And I have no ready answer, but it's a very fine. Sorry. Does anybody else have some ideas here to his question?
Well, you talked about either or, some of each. Don't you think that for a large number of thinking people, or people who read or think, that you could be comfortable with some of each? I mean, you may often need time for yourself, or you need to put your thoughts down, or keep a journal.
Yes, you're speaking from the point of view of wholeness already.
But
wholeness
you also may need to be out, you know, with people, or you may, otherwise, you know, everybody could go off to some retreat and spend the rest of their lives in a Holden or a monastery or whatever.
Holden is a nice balance, though. The touchstone, whether you really are more introverted or more extroverted, is how you recharge your batteries. What exhausts you? If putting energy into outer things is exhausting, and you recharge by going out, being alone, writing a journal, I need to be alone. then you're an introvert, more introverted. If you recharge, you're recharged by activities and doing things, and being alone is just time to change your clothes, so to speak. Then you're an extrovert. See, I have a very extroverted daughter who literally would spend most of her time just at home, just changing clothes, so she could go out and be something else. That was a little exaggerated, but I'm sure adolescents are mostly extroverted. But no value judgment on it, really. That's the thing, yeah?
I think as we move out of the need to be extroverted, I think sometimes we force ourselves into extroversion when we prefer introversion. I think becoming a senior citizen gives opportunity to use this introversion.
I have used
my dreams over a period of time. I know what's going to come into my life almost by what I'm dreaming. And then I begin to look for outer invitations, and pretty soon it just all falls into place, and I'm packing and off on another adventure.
All right.
I dream many dreams in a night, and
all right.
They really, I have learned to use them.
Come, sit here.
I'm just curious.
What, you didn't?
I'm going home today.
Oh.
And well. I just, there's no way I can stay.
Oh, well, you can write for the tapes. Would you like to share a dream, or?
I don't think of one right off. But oftentimes I'll be having a problem relating, perhaps, to someone, and in the dream I will meet that person and hear that person saying things that resolve all of the problems that I was creating for myself. And suddenly I think, why didn't I see the other side of the person without really realizing? And then I can, it's almost like being in the other person's shoes.
That's tremendous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish you could stay longer. that's kind of unusual. It takes me a long time. I'd like to share this one dream. My husband has heard it a number of times, but I'd like to share this dream to show how long sometimes it takes to assimilate what the dream says. therefore I'm so pleased to hear that you can sort of dream and put it right into practice or understand it.
Well, it happens. I don't think I put it.
No, it happens.
Somehow it seems to be come into my life without my doing anything.
Right. Well, that's exactly the attitude. Jung said, we are dreamed. Passive voice. We are dreamed. It happens to us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't dream. He even said we are lived, if we have the right approach.
I believe it.
Yeah, all right.
But I wonder what she said, she has more time maybe to do that. It seemed like I stopped dreaming when I had babies and had to get up at night and feed them. And they're still small, and they take so much energy that, you know, I don't even think about dreaming. I just think about sleeping.
We have that. Well, psychic energy, we only have that much. And when you're a mother of young children, I don't think we have time to remember unless, you know, unless we have some special time set aside where we can maybe take a nap and reflect before we get up.
I think part of it comes also with learning to meditate. I think meditation is leads you into the ability to use your dreams. And it was as I learned to drop into alpha awareness and use my, and allow myself to realize what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's the alpha awareness in meditation that leads into the dreams.
Does everybody know what alpha awareness is? Do you want to explain a little?
Well, it's a free-floating allowing yourself to just, through relaxation, to be unaware of your body, and then your mind just seems to be open to I think it's a collective unconscious.
Right.
That is coming to you, and from it you get such, you always come out of the alpha awareness, at least I do, with this wonderful feeling that that the world is just the greatest place, and everybody in it is.
Yes.
You can handle any situation, and if you get into a situation that you can't handle, you can drop into alpha awareness, and it sort of dissipates.
I really, I really have to ask you to come sit up here.
This is just my own personal experience.
Well, that's the most valuable. That's most valuable.
It's a wonderful high. It's not a drug high. It's just something that you can use any time that you need it.
Right.
Could it relieve one from physical pain then?
Yes. If I have arthritis sometimes. And when my shoulders get to bothering me, instead of getting up and taking an aspirin, I just simply drop into alpha awareness and use white light. And I hypnotize myself into sleep because I go to sleep. The next morning I'm stiff and sore, but I have slept without realizing that if I was in pain, I haven't realized it.
Oh,
I mean, it's
wonderful.
I sleep soundly, and yet I dream every night. I know that I dream. Sometimes I forget to tell myself to remember, and then I can't remember. I have this feeling that I've dreamed, but I can't recall it. But if I say to myself before I go to sleep,
yes,
I want to remember, then when I wake up, I know instantly what I dreamed.
Exactly.
I don't always remember it all day.
No. Then you should write it down.
I had a dream workshop a couple of years ago, and it was planned at a coastal setting, much like Holden, and around full moon, we were told that most people dream much more during the time of the full moon. And that if you learn to journal your dreams, that if you recall them within like that first 5 or 10 minutes that you wake, you usually can recall them, but if you don't, it's oftentimes very difficult to recall them after that.
Yes, as if she was saying, try to recall them within the first 5 minutes. You can jot down a word or two, you don't have to write it in great detail. Just so you have recalled it in your head, made it conscious, then you can write it any old time, actually. But the recall has to occur right away. Unfortunately, we often jump out of bed, figuratively at least, thinking, what do I do next, you see. And
what she was talking about, alpha awareness, just brought trying to me the verse that where Paul says, Christ will keep your hearts and minds, the peace that passes understanding.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And hearts and minds are guarded by Christ Jesus.
Oh.
That reminds me of that. And that is
it's a learned technique. I learned it in a group.
What kind of meditation do you do? I mean,
Well, it's sort of, it's alpha awareness. I just, I just let whatever will come, come. And it always
is there a specific relaxation you go through?
Yes, you start, in alpha awareness, you learn it's sort of a repeating. You go within, first of all, you pray the prayer of not taking in anything that will be evil, because it's necessary to guard against the evil coming. And then you just systematically start at your head and just simply relax, and you just feel suddenly.
Relax,
you just feel
your
just
cardiac
as
center. Would you all like
all
to have a relaxation session?
All of the poison going out your fingers, yeah. And all of your, you're just floating, and you're just not aware of your body, and then you are free to use your mind.
Right.
So you just basically go through each part of your body to just say, concentrate and relax.
I am.
But what? But what about your breath? Are you aware of your breath as well? Breath awareness.
I think you take a deep breath with each time that you are saying, "I am within."
I say, because the kind I do is where you become aware of your breath, and you have your breath go through different parts of your body. And
well,
then you become aware of your breath.
You take a deep breath, and then as you let it out, it's just as if
yes.
You can almost feel it going out your toes.
That's right,
your fingers.
Going out
your
fingertips.
It's a heavenly feeling.
Well, maybe we should have a relaxation exercise sometime. Yes? Thank you.
This is exciting to hear some of this, but I think as Christians, we always think that meditation and that kind of thing is bad, is wrong. But
if Christ
it
is within
used
you
as a tool,
right? If you believe that Christ is within you, then it's the Christ Spirit that is speaking to you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. How many here feel that meditation is not Christian or anti-Christian?
Oh, I'm suspicious of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, it's not a religion. It's a technique that helps you pray better or become more in touch with Christ within.
Yeah, they call it, I like the word centering, because it really does get
centering.
To where you can really.
About 3-4 years ago, I talked about centering, and I didn't get hardly any response. Mm. Looks like maybe.
I think some of us may be suspicious because it's been tied. Meditation has been tied in with so many offbeat.
Yes, and certainly transcendental meditation has, which sort of a quick fix, you know.
Well, I think the same thing is true of hypnotism also. We can hypnotize ourselves. Really, I think meditation
that is auto
sort of,
yeah, somehow.
Sort of, and it's just simply shutting off the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think hypnotism has a very bad connotation for some people.
Yeah.
And yet, I think that's a wonderful way to go to sleep, to just hypnotize yourself or meditation.
Mm-hmm. Meditate
just,
and relax.
Well, so some people used to do about saying prayers over and over again.
I don't use my mind that much. I mean, I don't think. Because the mind has to be free to absorb.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're saying prayers, you're in conscious control.
That's a good point, except the Jesus prayer repeated often enough becomes autonomous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
What's the difference between this meditation as alpha state
awareness
and disassociation? I can, if I don't like where I'm at, I can mentally put myself out the door.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I think that's a conscious thing you're doing. We're talking about letting go and getting in touch with the unconscious. I think it's yours is more conscious, isn't it? Dissociation. I've never heard the term used.
I was told not to do that.
Oh.
Because sometimes you go out the door and
take
it back.
Oh. It works both ways, doesn't it? Yeah. I have to think about that. Well, it's getting close to lunchtime. We've got about 7 more minutes.
There is a good book, if you're interested, by Jess Stern on alpha awareness, in which, as I read the book, it was just like taking the course over again, and he actually participated and must have had a similar teacher what I have. Mm-hmm. And I just did it as an investigation for, it's not the solution to illnesses or anything like that, but it can be helpful.
Hmm. Well, thank you. You really helped. Tomorrow my session will be at 4 o'clock. And what am I talking about?
I don't have it.
Well, go look at the bulletin board. At the moment, I can't remember. This alpha awareness is, I've dropped into alpha awareness. And I love that, being able to drop into this thing.
Do you use alpha awareness?
I don't use the term at all. I meditate. Yeah, I meditate every day. And it's a form of prayer. It's not a repeated prayer. Relaxation, meditation and prayer.
Isn't it during our sleep, during the rapid eye movement when we dream, but that's so important. I mean, you know, God knew what he's doing when he's creating the night and the day, and
yes,
the importance of our body to slow down and rest. And if we don't get that sleep, we don't get that time of dreaming, and therefore it really messes up. We don't have that time of our unconscious to think things. And
that's a very good point, because it's not just that it's important to remember your dreams. That's just sort of like the icing on the cake. The fact that you dream keeps you sane. People who are deprived of sleep, and in the experiment where they woke them up before, at the moment when they started having rapid eye movements and kept depriving them of that period of sleep, they got disoriented. You know what happens to you when you don't sleep for several nights? You just get almost psychotic. There's something, it's a processing. It seems like everything you take in has to be processed in the night so that you can wake up and function again. And I was so awed when I heard that. You're right. Then you also have a deep dreamless state. They're both, where you don't dream, where the body gets relaxed. Apparently those two things. The mind, during the dreaming, gets relaxation or clearing. And the body during dreamless sleep. And it goes in waves, so that, yeah.
Sometimes I'm a nurse, and I wonder, the sicker a patient is, the more they're awakened. You know, they're constantly awakened for different things, and that's especially bad in the ICU. And people do get ICU psychosis for a lot of different reasons, but I think that patients get sleep deprived, and I suppose, mm-hmm. and dream
that's
deprived,
true.
And
yes.
It's much more difficult for them to get better.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful point. Yeah.
That was an interesting statement that you made, that it was necessary for us to dream for our wholeness, because I don't know if this happens to other people, but to myself, in the rush of the day's activities or whatever you think you should be doing or need to be doing, whether it's domestic or career related, at least for myself, every now and then a disturbing thought pops up or an attitude, and I mean, I'm almost afraid or don't allow myself to pursue it at the time because I feel maybe it doesn't have a good connotation, or admit to myself that I'm capable of that time. But I think at any rate, it's something disturbing. But I suppose then, in relation to what you said, that dreams would be a way of working that out,
mm-hmm.
or really confronting you with it. And so the other way, you stomp it down, and you say, "Well, I'll think about that later."
Yeah.
Or I'll deal with this later, and you just rush on to the next activity, and you don't deal with it fully.
To give an example of how dreams, this just happened in Wenatchee, so it's a real short dream. I dreamt that I was exchanging a dime for a token, bus token. That was it. What kind of a dream? My husband remembered that at the bus station, I'd gone over to this grocery store and was buying things. And next to the grocery store, with an open window, were these TV video games. There were all these kids playing away. And on a big sign, it said, "Don't put in quarters, buy tokens." And we were very emotional about those kids. Are they going to save the world? You see? Now you see how that dream connected. So.
I heard this was years ago, but on the radio, somebody was talking about how dreams, you know, how come they're so crazy sometimes, and how, because there's so many parts of our subconscious. And the example he gave, which I'll never forget, was that if you went shopping that day, and perhaps you were taking your child child to ride horses or whatever, and you took a shower that morning, you might dream that you were riding on a horse and you were through a department store. Uh-huh. All these different fragments.
Yeah. Well, why don't you go back tonight and try to remember your dreams. If you are free at 4 and want to come back. Thank you.